This is the Invisible Collection. This is a podcast from MARES, House for Contemporary Culture in Maastricht. The Invisible Collection invites you to listen to works of art.
I felt goosebumps traversing my skin. An electric shock ran through my bones.
Here, everyone is welcome to tell a story about an artwork, young and old, from casual passersby to seasoned museum visitors.
Yet it looks so fascinatingly beautiful that to this day I can still remember it. And I don't think I will ever forget.
The Invisible Collection brings together people who talk about similar experiences they have had. What did they see? How big was it? What did it represent? What did it make them think about?
And for us, it is only after being hit by shrapnel and receiving the trace of history that it had become a painting.
Some works of art make such an impression that the experience may linger in your mind for a very long time. Even without seeing the works of art, simply listening to stories about them can convey an image or a feeling, almost like you're standing in front of the work yourself. And afterwards, you might look at that artwork or other works of art in a similar way. My name is Kaspar Stalenhoef. Welcome to the podcast. This is a special episode compiled by a guest curator, somebody that helps us navigate through the ever-expanding Invisible Collection. Where to start? This time, the guest curator is Daniel Rivera. He is a freelance classical musician and a volunteer at MARES. He studied art and culture at Maastricht University. We will listen to his selected stories from the Invisible Collection, and I will talk to him about what exactly caught his attention regarding these particular stories. Daniel, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Kaspar. Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah. So you've brought three entries today for this episode of the Invisible Collection. What can you say, like, in general, before we go into the specific entries? Is there something for you that unites them, or something that you feel maybe connects to you specifically?
Yeah, for me, I chose these three fragments because somehow they show us how art can disrupt our daily routine. Mm-hmm. So there are examples on how art can trigger bodily reactions, and also how art can also be reinterpreted.
Reinterpreted. In different ways.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like sometimes we can see something and we just get used to it. Mm-hmm. And something happens in history or in our life, and then it just changes our perception about this object, which could be an object before.
Yeah.
And suddenly it becomes something that has aesthetic features, mm-hmm, that we value and that we appreciate.
Yeah.
So I think each of these stories are a good example of how this could happen,
right,
in daily life.
Yeah, exactly. So three stories. Shall we just listen to the first one and then talk about why you chose that one in particular?
Yes, of course.
All right.
The art memory I want to mention is actually a book, or at least a specific scene from it. Maybe you know it. It's 1984 by George Orwell. To give you an idea, the main protagonist, Winston, evolves in an imaginary dystopia in which a central figure of the regime, Big Brother, controls everything. Winston seeks to rebel and therefore reads a forbidden manual censored in this dictatorship. I remember reading it in my small, quiet student room, my fingers touching the roughness of the paper pages as those of old books and breathing in their recognizable dusty smell. The scene that particularly affected me, and which I believe is truly a magnificent piece of art, is the very soothing and calm scene in which Winston is reading the forbidden manual in his safe haven, feeling in security, far from the control of the state, and full of hope for his rebellion to come. And then, unexpectedly, an iron voice, as Orwell describes it, speaks and pronounces this terrifying phrase, "You are the dead." It is the voice of a member of the secret police arresting him. I should say that during the whole book, I felt quite detached from the characters and almost emotionless while reading, maybe because of the fatalist way in which Orwell narrates the story, making us understand from the very beginning that we can forget about a happy ending. Despite that, this particular moment took me by surprise. As soon as the voice spoke up, only by a simple phrase, I felt my heart pounding in my chest. I was physically disturbed, almost shaking. I could hear the voice in my room. It was here. It spoke to me, murmured in my ear. It was a cold, soft, yet affirmed tone. I was with Winston, in his room. I was scared like he was. Or maybe he was in mine, my quiet and calm student room that abruptly appeared much less welcoming, reassuring. The scene made me profoundly uncomfortable, so much so that I had to close the book, take a deep breath, and feel the inhaled air flowing through my nostrils, into my lungs, reminding me that I was okay, that I was well, so that the gasping could stop, my heart could regain its normal beat, and the blood running through my veins could ease. I was, and still am, truly amazed at how, by this mere sentence, Orwell triggered in me so many emotions. I felt goosebumps traversing my skin. An electric shock ran through my bones. I was astonished at how, reading a book in which theoretically only my vision was being used, actually triggered in me so many complex and diverse and other overwhelming physical sensations. I'm sure that even while describing my feelings, you can picture it, this brrr sensation, where you almost have to shake off your emotions. To me, this was an art experience, one I am not ready to forget.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
It's quite an experience, yeah, the way she describes it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I chose this fragment, because, yeah, she's mentioned how she's reading a book, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, we can read a lot of books, and we are kind of familiar with this action. And she mentioned, like, she was detached from the characters and also kind of emotionless due to the lack of, hope.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a happy ending, let's say.
Yeah.
And suddenly something happens in the book, something is narrated in the book that made her react. And it's just a sentence. So for me, it was something that struck me, like, to say, yeah, sometimes we are just experiencing something, but we are experiencing maybe, as she said, like with one sense, right? Like with sight. And in the case of reading a book, we think like our only sense that is involved is sight. But suddenly something struck us, and then all our body, all our complete being,
yeah,
is struck by one action or by one input. And that's for me what is very interesting in this story, because art is like that. Like, we could be like in our daily day, just living,
yeah,
just having experiences, and suddenly,
yeah, and unexpectedly,
yeah, there is something that is imprinted in our memory.
Yeah.
And I'm sure like many people have these kind of experiences where there is something that they remember very vividly because it was something completely out of the blue.
Yeah. And here it was just a sentence, you are the dead.
Exactly.
And I can imagine, when you listen to this, I can picture her reading this book,
yeah,
in this somewhat detached way. And then suddenly, just by this sentence, and it could, maybe someone else would have it with a different sentence, but she got it there at that point. And suddenly it clicked or something, right? It's something, somehow it did something to her.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, now, as I mentioned, like, I think this is one of art features that,
yeah,
it suddenly can just kind of wake you up,
yeah,
in somehow.
Mm. This first story was narrated by Claire. And now if we go to the second one, it's narrated by Talisha van Beek. Daniel, can you say, before we listen to it, why you chose this one?
Yeah, this second story, I chose it because after listening to it, it made me reflect on in which ways we can interpret art.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, maybe you should listen to it.
Okay, and then we'll talk some more.
A statue with wings. That's what everyone called it. I mean, sure, it was a human body dissected in such a way that its skin and muscles could be used as wings. But in the end, that's what it was. As I stood in front of it, however, in Amsterdam at the Body Worlds exhibition a few years back, I wasn't sure if that description was a worthy one. Maybe it's a good idea to give some kind of introduction, otherwise this might sound too macabre. But I'm Talisha Van Beek and I study medicine. In about a year I'll be a doctor. That's why I was there, and a little common curiosity, of course. Now the exhibition show in a Body Worlds exists out of many different types, shapes, ages of human bodies. It's a mix of everything, and as such, it is also very interesting to see. They use bodies of those that have decided to donate their bodies after they are deceased, and they use it to make art. There are different poses they can be in. Some are flying, some are sitting, some are standing. Some still have a part of or their entire skin. Some no longer do. Some have instruments in their hands, which can be both musical or just an everyday thing you use. And all of that diversity and creativity, even if it is macabre, it's what makes it so engaging. This particular statue that caught my attention was a man. He was naked. I mean, they're all naked, but also naked of most of his skin. As such, you could see his muscles, and some of his organs even. I believe it was his liver and his intestines, but don't quote me on that. What I do remember was the sense of, not propriety, the opposite really. I mean, I'm usually not the type of person that would blatantly stare at a naked statue. I get embarrassed quickly. But the fact that this guy had his organs laying out, well, that somehow made naked seem a lot less naked, if that makes sense. I was intrigued by the way they had removed the skin at the front, the side still holding it together as a human being, and the back being split into two, both skin and muscles, that rose up above him like an angel. Only an angel wasn't the right word, because he didn't have that same soothing effect on your soul as an angel would have. Instead, it made your heart race and skin crawl at the same time. I remember seeing it, and my first reaction was to turn away, disgusted. Only I was with a friend, so not exactly forced, but compelled to look at it again, because she was taking her time. In hindsight, it's a good thing I wasn't alone, or I would have just left the exhibition altogether. As I looked back at the man, though, I really started paying attention to it, looking through my disgust and discomfort. I noticed the expression, which was peaceful in a way. I know it sounds strange, but I got a feeling of calm seas after heavy storms, as if he finally found his place in this world. And I realize that it might sound a bit like defaming the dead, and I don't mean to do that at all. I'm just recalling what I felt in that moment as best as I can. I looked at the organs in interest, moved downwards to its genitals and the legs, which struck a strong pose, slightly apart, one a bit before the other, as if at any moment he could just jump up and fly away. After I finished examining him at the front, I turned to the most intriguing, yet at the same time revolting part, his back. Like I said, the skin had been split open, the underlying muscles, the trapezius, the deltoid, and the latissimus dorsi, my medical side told me. On both sides, they had been removed from the underlying bone structure, and I wasn't sure how they were keeping it into an upright position like wings until I saw the wires hanging from the ceiling. I shivered when I saw that, almost being able to imagine what it would feel like to have that done to you. If I think back to it, I even get the shivers now. Yet it looks so fascinatingly beautiful that to this day I can still remember it. And I don't think I will ever forget. I hope you won't either, because it was beautiful.
That does paint a picture that I might maybe also will not forget. But you told me before that you have actually seen this.
Yeah, indeed. I also visited this exhibition, not the one in Amsterdam, but was in Mexico.
Ah.
Like, yeah, maybe a decade ago.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, as Talisha, I went there more for an educational experience.
Mm-hmm.
She mentioned that she did it because, yeah, out of curiosity as well, but also because she is related to her studies.
Yeah.
And then the experience I had was more like, okay, I'm looking at these bodies, this setting in different positions, So yeah, you see what the human body is capable of. But my experience was different because I didn't look at it as with artistic features.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's it's interesting to see kind of for the anatomical point of view. Yeah, so as an experience to be there.
Yeah.
But at that time, 10 years ago, I didn't feel like, okay, this is art. And then after listening to this fragment, it made me realize, well, and with other experiences as well, that we can encounter art in unexpected places.
Yeah.
So how she describes this could be sometimes too macabre.
Yeah.
And she's mentioned she also got shivers, but at the same time, she look at this a statue with wings as something beautiful, right? Mm. So it made me reflect a lot on how art could suddenly appear in front of our eyes, just because we change our interpretation, like the human body, right? We see our body every day. We are surrounded by other people, but we don't think a set of us as an artistic object.
Mm-hmm.
But everything could have, or everything have artistic features, aesthetic features. So art could be presented to us, and it depends on how we perceive it, how open we are in that sense.
Yeah, so then this, it looks like a medical, or it's like anatomy, which looks like a field far removed from art.
Yeah, exactly.
But through listening to Talisha's experience of it, you realize how it's about looking differently, or suddenly looking at it differently, right? And then, and that's what could be artistic about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's about realizing these features suddenly, and I think this repeats all over again, right? This is suddenly.
Yeah.
It's suddenly your eyes are open.
Yeah.
To these features which have been always there. But you were focused in other things, and it again comes again to this idea of we do stuff, and sometimes we are relying in one sense or two, and suddenly all our body is involved in any experience.
Yeah, and of course also the installation of an exhibition like this, a lot of thought must have gone into it in the way to present these bodies too. And the way to set them up, that's also, of course, that's also an artistic process too, right? It's not just bodies; they are set up in very different and beautiful ways.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's also the interesting part of this.
Mm-hmm.
I think when people maybe listen about this exhibition, they don't think about we are going to to a body museum.
Yeah.
But we are just going to to look from this curiosity perspective, or this educational perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But there is also some creativity
put exactly
in how the bodies are set up.
Yeah.
And then you realize you see this, and then you start perceiving bodies in this case, but could be other objects,
mm-hmm,
in a different way. And then you have also this imprinted in your memory.
Yeah, exactly. So then it's time for the third and the final story in this podcast episode. The third story you've selected from the archive of stories of the Invisible Collection. Shall we, before we say anything about it, shall we just listen to the fragment first?
Yes.
All right.
The artwork is a landscape painting which comes from the former dining room of my grandparents' house in Beirut. My grandparents' house in the near suburb of Beirut is situated in the exact location where the civil war started in Lebanon on April 13, 1975. During the course of the war, the painting was hit by shrapnel, and it bears the traces of these impacts. The painting itself is a painting of a peaceful European countryside with a stream, trees, and grass agitated by a little bit of wind, but not too much. It is a painting that is meant to bring you calm, peace, and serenity when you look at it, and it is clearly made for one to enjoy inside of his house. My grandparents bought it when they furnished the house, the peace that the painting is supposed to bring you was disrupted by the shrapnel impacts that it received. And it is while having lunch with Shrabel in front of that painting that we decided that it should become an artwork. The reason why we called it Becoming a Painting is because for us as artists, this was not an artwork. It is a painting that is painted in the mode of trompe-l'œil. And for us, it is only after being hit by shrapnel and receiving the trace of history that it had become a painting. This artwork could be considered a modified ready-made. It is a ready-made because we as artists didn't do anything to it. We did not add anything. We did not alter it in any way. But it is not completely a ready-made because it was hit by shrapnel. What I found interesting in that painting is the way that it aged. We can see, if we look closely at it, that the shrapnel impacts disrupted the way that the painting aged in time, meaning that the painting today is cracked. The paint on it is cracked, the oil paint, but it has cracked all around the holes made by the shrapnel. So you have to imagine that the canvas of the painting is pierced by little holes. All around these little holes, the paint has fallen, and all around the place where the paint has fallen, the cracks are circular and they follow the impact of the shrapnel. This means that if the painting hadn't been hit by shrapnel, it would have aged differently in time. And I found this to be a very interesting metaphor of the way that one can be affected by political events in his or her own country. We could say that the growth, the aging of the painting was altered, was modified by the occurrence of the civil war in Lebanon, and that this echoes the way that an individual's growth, an individual's aging can be also affected by such political events. In the case of that painting, it made it more interesting. It made it become an artwork, which is now traveling from exhibition to exhibition. It has become a painting and is still becoming an artwork every new time that it is exhibited.
This is an example of a story that's being told by the artist themselves, which is not always the case in the Invisible Collection. So you get a little bit of a different story too, right?
Yes, indeed. And I cannot just like more than agree with her, like, on how I also interpreted this story. And indeed, I chose this story because, it reflects on, well, as I mentioned at the beginning, like on this feature of art that is dynamic, mm-hmm. also in relation to the previous story, that it also depends on with which eyes we are looking at something.
Yeah.
And then for me, it was very interesting how, they mentioned like this painting was sort of in the dining room of the grandparents. And it was something, from the daily routine.
Yeah, very normal.
Yeah, something that wouldn't be so interesting for certain people,
yep.
Maybe for it was, but that's something that you could easily overlook.
Yeah.
And because of an historical event, then it gained a new value. So it's also very interesting that she said like it's signed also by the historical event, in this case, the civil war in Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also in a more personal way, kind of parallel of we are also always being influenced or also changed by the situations we are living in our daily life. And also how, the same as the painting, she mentioned how like the holes from the shrapnel,
yeah.
like the areas of the surface of the painting are aging in a different way,
yeah.
because of that.
Mm.
And I see it also as a parallel on we as humans, we also like, we could have like wounds or some experiences that also change our person. Well, not
they affect you.
Exactly. Like some things affects how we developed.
Yeah.
In the future and in our life.
Yeah. And you always take it with you. It's still visible and it's changed you. And it becomes part of your story.
Exactly. And this part of like, we are not ready. Well, we as humans, we are not ready-made. We are always changing. And in this case, she mentioned, yeah, it's a ready-made because, yeah, we didn't touch it, but it's not a ready-made because it's still evolving, right?
Yeah, so because a ready-made is an artwork that the artist has not made by their own hands, but just a found object, for example, right? And then saying or doing something to it maybe, and then saying, now it becomes an artwork.
Exactly. Yeah, reinterpreting, right?
Yeah.
The goal of an object.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, yeah, it was already a painting, but it was not something very valuable on the eyes of the artist.
Yeah.
And
it was also not theirs before.
Yeah.
But then taking it up and loading it with that meaning, for example, then
exactly.
It becomes theirs.
Yeah, that's why I chose this story, because yeah, it also tells us something that we can connect to our development as human beings.
Yeah.
Like, we are not ready-made objects, we are always evolving. And we can also embrace that, the same as the artist embraced this painting that was damaged, which could be also sometimes the situation when you see something that is damaged and you just get rid of it.
Yeah.
But in this case, they reinterpret it and they look at it with other eyes, with a new perspective, and say, okay, this is something that is worth of showing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a nice idea, right? That it's damaged, but then in that case, it becomes more value, or even more beautiful, maybe even because of that damage.
Yeah, exactly. And it's something that now it's showcased in different parts, so people can, again, like, can reflect on that as I did listening to this story.
Yeah. And that is an artwork by Stéphanie Saadé and Charbel Joseph Boutros. It was thinking after like the first and the second, I was thinking, oh yeah, I see the theme here, Daniel, that you set up. And then this one actually also really fits that theme. So it was really nice to have these three together and hearing your thoughts and see how they relate. So thanks for your participation.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to participate on this.
This is the end of this curated episode of The Invisible Collection. Our guest curator was Daniel Rivera. You can also browse through the entire Invisible Collection on the Mares website and in your favorite podcast app. The Invisible Collection is continuously updated with new stories about artworks. If you would like to contribute with your own story, you can contact Mares. Everyone is welcome. You can find the contact information in the podcast show notes or on mares.org.